From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. On May 18, 1980, Mount St. Helens went from being a fairly obscure peak in the Cascade Range to one of the most famous volcanoes in human history. That massive eruption sent a cloud of ash 80,000 feet into the air and then rained down on 11 states. It killed more than 50 people and caused nearly $3.5 billion in damage in today's dollars. Recently, Mount St. Helens has experienced more than 400 small earthquakes on its slopes, which begs the question, should we be worried? Today on Oregon on the Record, you'll hear from a research seismologist at the Cascade Volcano Observatory and learn that while there is no immediate threat of an eruption and that small earthquakes on volcanoes are very normal, when it comes to our Cascade volcanoes, for some of them, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when they will erupt. The entire Cascade Range is dotted with volcanoes. You know their names, Rainier, Baker, Hood, the Three Sisters, and more. Today on the show, we talk with an expert and learn which ones are most likely to erupt in the future. Weston Thielen, a research seismologist with the United States Geological Survey Cascade Volcano Observatory. Thanks so much for coming on and talking to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I've read that there have been small seismic activity around Mount St. Helens. I think I read somewhere that's almost 400 little earthquakes since the beginning of February. What's going on?
Yeah, 400 and counting. We've got, you know, Mount St. Helens is an active volcano. We all have visions of big eruptions there. Mm-hmm. And between eruptions, it has earthquakes. Mm. And in terms of the Cascades, it has lots of earthquakes. Now, this is not necessarily a cause for great concern from either scientists or people that live around the volcano. This is part of what we call background activity at Mount St. Helens. Mm. And the background activity at Mount St. Helens consists of time periods where you have very few earthquakes, and it's seemingly dead. And then also time periods where we get lots more earthquakes, like what we've been seeing in the past weeks and months. Sometimes we call those swarms. And background activity consists of both those things, kind of quiet time periods, swarmy time periods. And, you know, the nice thing about Mount St. Helens is that it is one of our best monitored volcanoes in the Cascades. Hmm. And so we are picking up very small signals. I was at the volcano doing field work a couple of weeks ago while these earthquakes were happening, and you could not feel anything at the surface, nor would you expect to with the small size that these events are.
Hmm.
And, you know, what that really, you know, we have a really dense network of instruments at the volcano, so that can help us understand what's going on. But we also have a very long time period of monitoring at the volcano. What we see with that is that, or, you know, what that affords us to do is take the time period that we're seeing now, take the earthquakes, the numbers, the sizes, how they look, and we can compare them back in time to other time periods.
Hmm.
We can look at other time periods and say, is this activity like that time period or is it different? And nothing's ever exactly the same, but there are several time periods in the 80s and the 90s, and then again at the end of last year, where we saw activity that was broadly similar to what we see now. And, you know, to summarize what we're seeing now, we're seeing very small earthquakes at depths that are, you know, maybe a little less than 5 miles below the surface on average. And, you know, when you look at a map, it looks like there's a lot of there's a lot of earthquakes there. But when you compare to time periods like before an eruption occurs, these rates are very, very low.
Okay.
And so we're talking a few events a day in the current time period. And when we compare that back to other time periods that look like this, it's all consistent with something that we call recharge, which is also something that we expect at an active volcano when it's not erupting. You know, magma moves into the system, into the magmatic system, at depth during time periods when it's not erupting. Hmm. And our best explanation for what's going on here is that we're seeing the changes, you know, the stress changes around the magma chamber from these little pieces of magma that are feeding in. And this is exactly what we expect at Mount St. Helens between eruptions.
Okay. In human time, the eruption that happened at Mount St. Helens, the big eruption, I believe it was 1980, you know, that seems like a long time ago. But of course, geologically speaking, it was barely a tick of the clock. But I'd love for you to just maybe give us a 30,000 foot view of what happened on that fateful day. Kind of talk about that amazing eruption that was, you know, close enough in time that many people who live here still remember it. And certainly, you know, it was captured by the, you know, national and international news media. Just give us kind of the briefest of history lessons of what happened on that amazing day.
I mean, you know, when you talk about, especially when from the observatory standpoint, when we talk about that eruption, we really have to start a couple of months before time.
Okay.
And what we, when we first started seeing activity at Mount St. Helens, it was in late March of 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there was a single seismometer on the side of the volcano. And the seismicity or the earthquakes were such that, at least initially, there's a little bit of ambiguity as to whether or not this was coming from the volcano or from a fault that was kind of around the volcano, because the area around the volcano is seismically active as well.
Hmm.
And so there was some ambiguity there. Eventually, the activity got higher. And it was clear that this was coming from the volcano. So there was a response that occurred. Pacific Northwest Seismic Network added instruments to the volcano. The USGS started to spin up a response of geologists to investigate what was happening. And then over the course of the next couple months, we saw minor explosions at the summit.
Mm-hmm.
We saw additional gas come out. And more dramatically, we saw the side of the volcano really bulging out.
Yeah.
And, you know, that obviously, because we're scientists, we measure that quantitatively. But there, you know, you could look at the side of the volcano and see that there was a gigantic bulge coming out. And that was really destabilizing the cone of the volcano.
Hmm.
And, you know, activity, at least seismic activity, had kind of leveled off. It had not, it wasn't increasing anymore before May 18th. I've personally looked at those records leading up to May 18th several times. I've looked at data that was recovered from really old seismometers that where, you know, the people who were recovering that data literally had to put these tapes in ovens to get the magnetic tape to kind of re-adhere before they could run it through the system and get that data back.
Huh.
And there are no indications at all that there was any, you know, obvious precursors to what happened early in the morning on May 18th.
Hmm.
And, you know, what happened then and what people are familiar with is that basically the side of the mountain fell off.
Yeah.
And that generated a cascade of different events. And, you know, the timing of that is the timing of all the events that occurred afterwards is really pretty spectacular. You know, you had this landslide and lateral blast occur that went, you know, basically due north. And so that was sort of problem number one. That material, that landslide material, included a bunch of glaciers, water, and it sat there in the upper Toutle River, and it took hours for the lahars to actually start. So you think about the lahars that went down the Toutle, it took a while for the deposit to actually, for the water to collect out of the deposit, and we call it dewatering, which is where the water collected and moved and was able to move in sort of a cohesive way and move all that lahar material downstream. And so there was a delay there. There was also a delay in the vertical column. So yeah, there was this lateral column, but it took a while for the vertical column to really start up. And then the eruption really got going. People are familiar with the images and accounts of that part of the eruption for sure.
Yeah.
You know, science-wise, the 1980 to 86 eruption was, really a watershed moment for volcano science within the U.S.
I bet. Weston, one of the things that I'm fascinated about is the relationship between earthquakes and volcanoes. Obviously, we're in an area here in Oregon where you can kind of get both, obviously, and we're certainly very well aware of, the Cascadia subduction zone, and I think many people are cognizant of the potential for that. But then, of course, we also have volcanoes all up and down the Cascade Range. What is the relationship? Does activity at a volcano cause an earthquake? Does an earthquake on its own potentially cause activity at a volcano? Talk about the relationship.
Yeah, so we can go a lot of different directions here, and I'll start with the small earthquakes that happened around the volcano. So we get, volcanoes have, when they move material, so that can be magma, that could be water, that can be gases, when that moves through the volcano, it changes the stresses in the crust or in the rock around the conduit that it's using. And if the conditions are right, in terms of, how warm or cold the crust is, or if it's pre-stressed, if the cracks are in the right direction, then those stresses might cause an earthquake. And what we've seen through a lot of eruptions here in the U.S., worldwide, is that those stresses often do create earthquakes that give us some sense of those stress changes underneath the volcano. Now, the tricky part and the thing that makes my job really interesting is that we often see earthquakes before eruptions, but not every swarm leads to an eruption. In fact, most swarms, most increased activity before or that happens at volcanoes doesn't come with an eruption.
What is the, I don't know what the right phraseology is, but what is the best sort of posture from your point of view about our ability to predict? Many of us know it's nearly impossible to predict an earthquake, but I'm wondering, is it easier, or maybe not easier is the right word, but is it more solid evidence that we can predict when a volcano may erupt?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, and the answer is always it depends, right? Okay. So you're absolutely right that earthquake prediction is not, in almost all circumstances, is not possible. But that doesn't mean that we can't use earthquakes that we record to forecast an eruption. And we, particularly at a spot like Mount St. Helens, where we have lots of really high quality observations that are occurring at the volcano, we and a long history of activity, we can use that to create forecasts that are actually, we think, pretty good. And we can do this. This isn't like something that's novel to Mount St. Helens. The longer the better the volcano is monitored, the longer it's monitored, the better shot we have. And a really good example of that is Kilauea in Hawaii or Mauna Loa in Hawaii, where we have lots of cycles of eruption going on. We have a really good sense of where magma is moving from and to, and what that looks like in the different streams, not just in the in the seismic data, but also in how the volcano deforms and how it outputs gas, maybe how the gravity is changing. Lots of different things that we can look at that all are kind of pointing to the process that's going on and giving us clues about how close we might be to an eruption.
Is there a particular volcano in the Pacific Northwest that causes you or your team the most concern about a potential for an eruption?
Yeah, so there's lots of volcanoes that we see on the horizon, right? Especially in Oregon, we've got the Sisters, we've got Jefferson, we've got Hood, and Crater Lake, obviously, you know, even further south down to McLaughlin.
Mm-hmm.
And to, you know, a casual observer, you look at these and you go, it's a volcano, it's probably active. But what we know based on, you know, lots and lots of field work by geologists who crawled around in all the drainages around all these volcanoes that have constructed the geologic history of each of these volcanoes is that some are much more active than others, right? So there are volcanoes that you might call extinct.
Okay.
And, you know, some of those are certainly, you know, like one example would be Mount McLaughlin, right? Okay. Nice, beautiful cone.
Mm-hmm.
As a side note, great ski in the spring. but it is, you know, when you get up to the top, when you look at it from Medford, it's nice, looks like a normal volcano. When you get to the top or you look at it from kind of the northeast side, it is very dissected. And by that, I mean that it's very bumpy. And in fact, that's because the glaciers during the last ice age have sort of stripped away that part of the volcano. And it hasn't had enough, you know, it basically hasn't had eruptions since then to build the cone back up.
Okay.
And so there are other examples of that, like Mount Thielson. And actually, Jefferson is kind of that way. North Sister, Middle Sister. And so there are volcanoes that we sort of don't expect to erupt.
Okay.
We, as scientists, we'd never say never.
Sure.
But
sure.
We don't expect those to erupt. And we've assigned, and then there are other volcanoes that we do expect to erupt. And we can look at this based mostly on the geologic history that has been constructed by geologists in each of these. And so what we've done is that we have a report that assigns a threat assessment. It's mm-hmm. basically a threat assessment for each of these volcanoes. It combines both the volcanic activity and the exposure to aircraft travel overhead or populations around there, and assigned volcanoes to a very high threat, a high threat, moderate threat, and a low threat. And so I'll talk about the very high threat volcanoes to start.
Okay.
That we think have the highest likelihood of being active. Now, not being active in our lifespan, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but sure. You know, these are the centers that we think based on the geologic history are ones that have the potential currently to host an eruption. So in Oregon, that would be Hood, the Three Sisters area, which I'm deliberately not saying one of the sisters, but the Three Sisters area.
Okay.
Newberry and Crater Lake.
Hmm. Okay.
And so now when we open that up to the Washington Cascades, the very high threat volcanoes are St. Helens, Rainier, Glacier, Baker.
Oh,
now,
okay.
When you think about this list, you're like, wait, now you're sort of leaving some cones out, right? Mount Adams is a big, big honking volcano.
Mm-hmm. I've been on the top of it.
Yeah. Also a good ski. But it hasn't had a lot of activity since the last ice age.
Hmm.
And so it is you know, it's one of these that really hasn't had a lot of activity recently. It obviously has in the geologic history. It wouldn't be a big volcano that way. Jefferson is another one that isn't in that category because the quantity of recent eruptions that it's had is not that high. And, you know, I've already talked about McLaughlin, Eielson. Those ones, you know, are pointy things. They're volcanoes. But, yeah, they're not. They're based on the geologic history. They're not one of the volcanoes that we sort of expect to erupt next. Now, in terms of overall probability, the Cascades is not an area over the course of somebody's lifetime that has eruptions very often.
Sure.
So, you know, you've got the Aleutian Range, you know, out in the Aleutian Islands and then back up into the Cook Inlet that has lots of eruptions over the course of somebody's lifetime.
Hmm.
But we, here in the Cascades, we just don't have that sort of production. Now, what we can say is that just overall, kind of percentage-wise or probability-wise, that if you're betting, Mount St. Helens, based on its geologic history, will be the next volcano to erupt in the Cascades. Now, we're not talking a 1980s-style eruption. Probably the most likely scenario for the next eruption at Mount St. Helens would be another dome-building eruption like what happened in 2004-2008.
Okay.
But Mount St. Helens will most likely be the next volcano to erupt in the Cascades.
Wow, fascinating, fascinating. I could talk to you all day about this stuff, and I know that it is something that is very interesting to a lot of people. Weston Thielen, he's a research seismologist at the USGS Cascade Volcano Observatory. Really appreciate you coming on and explaining what's happening at Mount St. Helens and Mount St. Helens, and also giving us just a general overview about something that we all live with.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me and taking the time. Really appreciate it.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow, you'll hear a conversation with Lane County's new district attorney, Christopher Perosa. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.